All right, so not really too much to add today. I posted an announcement last night about the Peerceptive that trying this semester for the first time as our peer review tool. Not quite sure how it's going to work, but if it works well, great. If it doesn't work well, it's not going to affect your grade any. So that if it's a total disaster and there's a major snafu or something like that, then I'll just correct for that. But hopefully it streamlines some of these processes. So that has been so those two assignments, the project report assignment and the presentation assignment, are available. And theoretically, you should just be able to go to them. I can't quite see exactly how it looks like on mine on the student view because I'm not in a group. And so it looks different than me when I go into my student view. So let me know if you have any technical problems uploading your presentation and report to Peerceptive through those assignments. Theoretically, what should happen is you'll upload those sometime between now and Wednesday night. And then Thursday morning, it will automatically assign individuals to peer reviews. And then, so starting Thursday morning, you'll then be able to go back into that assignment through Peerceptive, and it will then say, here is a report, and here is a presentation for you to evaluate, and here's the rubric, and you'll fill out the rubric in the comments, and then I'm only asking you to do one of each, and then after that, you'll submit that, and then you're done, and it will calculate a score based on the kind of quality of your a review, and it will calculate a score of your report based on all of the aggregate reviews that come in. And then that's all hidden from you at the moment. And then I go through and then look at all of your reports and see, and then add my own reviews and then see kind of how well it does. It does this weird resampling thing that is so that your reviews are ordinal scores, but it's resamples from a categorical distribution. Seems like a really dumb way to implement things. So I'm a little skeptical of the resampling process. I don't know why they didn't do something a little more straightforward, like just keep it categorical or keep it cardinal. But we'll see how it works. People seem to like it, so I'll try it and see. And then, like I said, I sort of know what the distribution of scores usually are on the reports and presentations, and I'll make sure that you're not penalized by this new tech. So that's out there. If you have any problems, let me know ASAP because this is a new frontier for me. And so hopefully there'll be less problems, but maybe there could be more. So just let me know. So those assignments are out there. They're in the final project information module. They're in the assignments module, and they're in that recent announcement I sent out last night, where you can just link directly from them. Only one person in your group needs to upload that, and it should be count for the whole group. But if you see anything that looks weird, that doesn't seem to make sense, like, oh, my group member uploaded this, but it's still giving me the opportunity to upload or something, just let me know, because again, this is a new frontier for me, and the view I get because I'm not in one of your groups is different even though it's in the student view. So I don't have a chance to kind of play with it. Otherwise, the big thing, so that's Wednesday night. I set this as I used to make this a much harder deadline when I was using Canvas. I still want you to get in by 11:59 due to weird technical limitations in Peerceptive. I had to actually set this to the Thursday 10 a.m. time. So Peerceptive will let you. Peerceptive isn't going to assign peer reviews, but for the 10 a.m. But if I don't see your report by 11:59. Then you'll get emails from me overnight asking you to upload that. Because at least on Canvas, it's a major problem if you have it automatically assign peer reviews and not all of the reports and presentations are in. So that's why I end up manually triggering that. And so if likewise, if they're not in Peerceptive, then I'm not sure how graceful it is about after it's assigned reviews if something comes in. So it's really important to get that in. And so I'm still asking you to get those in by 11:59 Wednesday night. And if you don't, then I'll probably be bugging you about getting those in because that can have implications for how the peer reviews are assigned. So that's Wednesday. And then those peer reviews are due Saturday night. I think Again, I've got it set to sort of Sunday morning. So I know how this worked with Canvas. Supposedly it'll be a little bit cleaner and perceptive, but I think once that Thursday threshold hit, then it should, then if you go back to that assignment, then you should be able to do the peer review. And then once you're done, and then it will calculate your grade, and that'll be it. That'll be all that you have to do for these. I was tempted to add a review your teammates period phase, but I just thought that was a little too ambitious. Perceptive allows me to do that. So if you use it in other classes and you are able to review your teammates, and because a lot of people have requested that in the past, that's something I'm interested in adding in the future. I just wasn't, because it's my first time using Perceptive and it requires a third phase of review. I was just a little nervous about it and delaying grades and things like that. So I didn't do that, but I know it's there and I'm thinking about it for the future. So if you have any feedback about that, if you've used this in any of your other courses and you like the ability to review your teammates and use that to adjust grades, then I'd love to hear that feedback. Because again, it's a new frontier for me and trying to decide if it's worth the investment to do. All right, so that's all the project stuff. And then in the middle of that Thursday, that's the period technically where stage one of the exam is. So I'll be here Thursday morning. If you want to come here to take stage one of the exam, you don't have to. It will automatically become available early Wednesday morning. So basically midnight tonight. So stage one will become available Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. And I'm thinking about it, I think I'm going to extend it, its availability through Saturday. I like to put a little gap just in case somebody for some reason forgets to submit their stage one, then I have some time to bug them before giving them a zero. Because once I turn on stage two, I can't have stage one available. So I think what we're going to do is extend the availability to Sunday morning at 10 a.m., and then I'll have that whole Sunday to bug people. And then if nobody responds to me, then that's what it is. And then stage two will be available Monday morning. So basically Sunday at midnight. And then you'll have stage two Monday through Friday. That exam period, which I think is Thursday morning at like 9:50 a.m., then this room will also be staffed. And so if you want to do your collaborative exam here, if you want to use this time during finals week and this space to collaborate, that's fine. You don't have to. So after this class, there's nothing formal that I'd expect you to do in this classroom for the rest of the semester. You can use this space at these times, but again, it's exactly the same as the midterm. So that's the schedule there. So before we get into the content of the exam, are there any questions about any of this line? Yeah. What do you mean by where it's everywhere?
Oh, like the distribution, so it's where it's
Oh, gotcha. So the question is like, do we want a really detailed input modeling report on every input? I would say that, there's a 4-page constraint. And so you want to put what in that 4 pages, whatever is convincing and compelling to your story. That probably doesn't require you to justify every single input model. Now, having that as an appendix, like saying, these are our input models, the details of these are in appendix A, that's fine but there's some of them like, it's not surprising that in a arrival time distribution at a store that is open to the world, like that doesn't have any interesting processes in front of it, is probably going to have exponentially distributed into arrival times. So I don't really need to see that. But if it's something more interesting, like we chose a normal distribution for something that you might normally expect might be a Weibull distribution. Well, then I might need to see some, like if it's sort of surprising, then maybe that bubbles up into the report. But if it's not so surprising and you have it, then put it into the appendix and refer to it. If you can see in the rubric, there is a line on input data, I'm not looking for every single input to be rigorously justified. Yeah, it would be easy for me to just say I'm looking for, like, I either can make a very strong objective rule and say it's all got to be in there, but realistically, I mean, some people have 18 inputs and some people have 4 inputs. And I feel like it's an extra burden to say, well, just your appendix is going to need to be 20 pages long for this group and only 2 pages long for this group. So that's why I'm a little waffling here, but because I feel like some inputs, I like it, if you read through it and you're like, wow, that really feels like it needs to be justified because that's a weird input, then probably we need sort of more stuff up front. But if it's like, well, this seems like just like our textbook cases that we've been hearing about all semester, well, then maybe that doesn't need to be mentioned or, you know, as much. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Any other questions about the general format of things? Okay. So yeah, final report reminders. So yeah, the final report 4 pages has this very specific format, which is detailed online. Title page doesn't count the 4 pages. Executive summary through conclusion does. The executive summary should be a full abstract. So I should be able to tell you know, what you studied, roughly how you modeled it, what your results were, what your conclusions were in one paragraph all together. So an executive summary is not an introduction, it is a whole summary of the report. And then this sort of flow here, which is probably also the flow of your presentation. So general description of the problem, and well, then like, so we studied this system. This system tends to have a problem around noon on Wednesdays, and this is a description of the problem. So we're wondering, you know, how do we improve that problem? So what's causing that problem? And so in order to answer that, we built a simulation model of the system, and we've modeled these important aspects that we think go into the problem. So that's our methodology. And after running that sim, we have these results that were generated. So in the as-is system, we get something that matches what we expect. But then in our modified system, it turns out that there's, even though these modifications we thought were good, would actually end up performing just as well as the as-is system. So it may not be worth investing in this. And then that ends up being your conclusion that even though it seems like switching from this queuing model to this queuing model could potentially make improvements for this particular system, we think due to these reasons that intervention doesn't seem to make a difference. And so it's not worth the investment or something like that. So that would be kind of, you know, what you put in the report, and that's basically what you're going to summarize in your presentation. Your presentation can have less detail than this. Your presentation, you know, if somebody asks for detail stuff, then you know you could say, well, that's detailed in the report. So the presentation is sort of meant to be a 10-minute, almost an executive summary with figures. So don't feel like in your that's like you don't want your presentation to say like, well, here's our input model for one. Here's our second input model. Here's our third input model. Here's our fourth input model. If that doesn't help tell your story, then you shouldn't be going through all of that. You know, so you know those sort of more detailed justifications can be put in the written document. The presentation is trying to make a compelling case for your conclusion, basically. All right, so that's the report. If you need more, again, the appendix is unlimited. Upload your model files, you know, any supporting documentation along with the report. There's some sample reports online. And then yeah, so that's the final project. So before going into the final exam, any other questions about the report or the presentation? Presentations, keep it to 10 minutes. Totally okay if you go under that. Okay. The exams, so it's pretty much exactly the midterm. Same length as the midterm, same format as the midterm, on Canvas, locked down for stage one, collaborative for stage two. Two-sided handwritten or hand-produced. So it doesn't have to be handwritten, it can be typed, but I just don't want screen captures. So exactly the same constraints as we had for the formula sheets, cheat sheets, group sheets that were for the midterm. So that's what we're just sort of saying here. Even though technically the final exam is 110 minutes, this has still been designed as a 75-minute exam because stage one is theoretically meant to fit within this period. I add 15 minutes just for technical issues, just like with the midterm. There is a lockdown browser compliance test you have to take in order to unlock the exam, just like the midterm. So all of that is pretty much the same. So then stage two, you can collaborate with anybody currently enrolled in the class. You can use your book, you can use your notes, you can use Canvas. I don't want you to use other resources, but it's not on lockdown. It's 20% of your score, that's 80% of your score. You won't get your scores or the results or the solution sets between the two. You'll get them after stage two closes. So any questions about the general format? Again, this is pretty much the same as the midterm. Okay, so what's going to be on it? So it's cumulative, but there will be a bias toward the stuff that we talked about after the midterm. So do expect to have to do a hand simulation again. So it's just good to know that, to see that you come out of this class knowing how a discrete event system simulation timeline is produced. And so you will have to do a hand simulation or some aspect of it, very similar to how you did on the midterm. So there are example final exams on Canvas. And then there's also the examples of those from the midterms, which will be useful. But a lot of the things, if I can take a concept from before the midterm and bake it into a concept from after the midterm, I try to do that. So I mentioned before the midterm, you had to do inverse transform sampling. And so I gave you random numbers and then you had to generate random variants. Well, after the midterm in this last section, we've learned about other types of variants like antithetic variants even common random numbers, generating variants from your simulation using common random numbers. So you can imagine me combining those where I give you a string of random numbers, but instead of asking you to do an inverse transform sample, I ask you to generate an antithetic variant. So I might say that, so you then have to know, you grab one random number, you have to do one minus that random number, run both of those through whatever the simulation model is, and then get outputs and then average them together. And that average is your antithetic variant. So those are the types of things that sort of blend. So you're going to see a few fundamentals, just reminders, remember my definition of what a model is something that answers a what if question. So a model is, a model doesn't have to be on a computer. A model doesn't have to be written down in math. A model is a generic model. It should be able to apply to a fashion model, to a pharmaceutical model, an animal model, to all sorts of things. But a model is anything that helps answer a what if question. So those like fundamentals, expect to see some of those, but the bulk of it will be stuff that comes after the midterm, which is more, statistical based. Do expect to see a little bit of arena. So before the midterm, we didn't really have enough, but do expect to see an arena block diagram, not a complicated one, but expect to see a relatively simple flow and then some questions about it. So if I were to change resource capacity, where would I do that in this block diagram? If I were to change inter-arrival rates for customers, where would I do that in this block diagram? Those types of questions, that's what you should be kind of prepared for. So it will start with some concept questions that are gonna be multiple choice and a true or false. Things like steady state and terminating systems, what are general concepts about that. And then imagine some short problems. So these will require you to maybe do a little bit of pencil work and then figure out what the right answer, maybe fill in a numerical answer. There's a little bit of that. And then statistical tests. So yeah, you may have to do a power analysis of a paired t-test, or you might, like you did on the homework. Or you might have to do a goodness of fit test. You probably won't have to do all of these. I'll probably pick one of these, but you should be prepared to be able to do these. And so certainly it's easy for me to put a chi-square test on an exam. I did that, I think, on the midterm. So, but now the chi-square test wouldn't be about uniform distribution. It would be about a generic distribution. Now, I would probably pick a really simple distribution, like a triangular distribution or something, something where it would be pretty easy for you to calculate the probability of it falling into each bin, not something that you're going to have to do a lot of fancy integrals in order to calculate the right probability. So I'm going to try to make it easy enough for you to do without needing a lot of math, but I do need to make sure that you understand the concept. So those statistical tests will be there, and then a design problem. And so that might be one of these, like I'm saying, developing a random variable generator, like something like using AVs or CRNs. So you know, this is, again, very similar setup as the midterm, just kind of shifted with the content sort of post-midterm. So what are good things to study? There are, you know, sample final exams in that final exam module. There's the midterm is not a bad thing to look back on and still see that you feel comfortable with the midterm. Homeworks, I think this is, I'm going to be D3 at H, I'll change that. But these homeworks here, like the Kolmogorov-Smirnov test, you know, that's one that that's a really easy one to put on a midterm. It's actually not that hard of a test to do. I think it's actually much easier to do a KS test than a chi-squared test. So, but it's one that you don't do as much. And so that's an easy one to forget about. But that's the one where you sort the numbers and so on. So do you remember how to do a KS test, but for a generic distribution, like a triangular distribution and not a uniform distribution? So that, make sure you know how to do that. Definitely recall hand simulation. And then a little bit of your arena logic. Confidence intervals. So definitely, make sure you know how to interpret confidence intervals. Remember that if you have two confidence intervals and they don't overlap, then we can conclude that those two populations have a mean that's different with P less than 0.05. It's statistically significant, the difference between them. So, confidence interval is definitely important. Remember what a prediction interval is. Those bias issues that came up in homework J2. So remember that for steady state simulations, there's a big threat of bias if you get your initial conditions wrong. But for terminating simulations, you got to get your initial conditions right because they're a part of the system. So those are kind of the things I was hoping you're getting out of homework J2. There are a couple of additional problems from the Banks textbook that might be useful to consider. So these are on the slides. And there's some solutions to some of these problems that are posted up there in the final exam module. So those are resources to look at. The other thing is for every unit, if there's something that just doesn't make sense that I said, every lecture has a chapter associated with it from the Banks book where I may not go through things in exactly the same order as Banks, but I tried to organize the class so that things kind of fall into the same chapter. So, you can see maybe Banks did it better than I did. So you can go back and maybe that's a different way that presents the same material. So that's a general overview. So questions about the format of the exam? If you feel you're comfortable with the midterm, and if you think you'll feel comfortable with the, again, it's designed exactly like the midterm. Okay, well then, let's do this. Let me get a snapshot of who's here today for we'll see. I'll say in a second. Where did I click go there? Okay, so I'm just going to say that just put in yes as your answer. Are you here today? Yes. So what I'm going to do is just for my records, Kate, for those of you who are here, this will give me an idea of who was here. For everybody else, I'm just going to give an excused absence because it's just a final exam review day. It's better to have credit than an excused absence. So you do get a little bit of a bump from being here, but I'm not covering any new content here. So I feel like it'd be weird for me to penalize you for not being here too. So at this point, after you're done with that, you can leave if you like, or if you have questions, you can give that, you can ask. Otherwise, I have basically a set of grade assist slides starting back from the very first unit that I can go through quickly. And as questions come up, you can stop me and we can go over them. So, that's just mainly meant to sort of get people thinking. Do you have questions?
Yeah, I was wondering
Yes, exactly. So, so stage one will be released tomorrow, like all of tomorrow. So it's like tonight at midnight, it should turn on. So Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And then, so you got all those 4 days, and then it will be available till Sunday at 10 a.m. And then that gives me Sunday to bug people if they haven't gotten their exam in, so I can make sure everybody's got an opportunity to get a score. And then stage two will be Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So all finals week. Other questions?
And I'll just leave that open.
All right. So, you know, again, stop me if you have questions. If none of this is useful for you, I'm not going to ask any more iClicker questions. You know, this is basically 475 in a nutshell down here. You know, that's sort of it there. So, you know, back to the basics. You know, these are all things that I could ask about on the final exam. These are things that I think are fundamental and important. So, you know, what are models? What are the general vocabulary we use to describe models, particularly discrete event system simulation models? How to step through. So in Arena now that you know how to use Arena, that little step function there that actually allows, that tells Arena to go event by event through the DES model. So can you start from something that looks like this and something that looks like this and generate this by yourself? You know, that's hopefully something, a skill that you pick up while doing this class. So so that's definitely something that I'm gonna wanna make sure that you've got here on the exam. So can you generate this event timeline where the inter-arrivals generate the arrivals, where the inter-arrivals are events, the arrivals are events, and the inter-arrivals are activities, then the departures are events, and the service times are the activities, and the service times don't necessarily line up. And so when activities don't quite line up, then that generates delays. And those delays are the outputs that we're interested in. That's why we run the sim. That's the sort of mystery, is what are the delays we're going to get out of the sim? And so those, you know, knowing how to do that. So everybody feel confident about activities, delays. So the then, you know, we went into basics of probability stuff. So before we could build those models, we had to know how to build distributions that those models could sample from. So we had to know what distributions were. So, you know, do you remember what a PMF, a PDF, a CDF are? Mean, expected value, variance, these sorts of things. Common distributions then. So what are the common distributions that we see in these modeling tools like Arena all the time? And why would you use one over another? What are the key parameters? Those sorts of things. So, you know, this generally this idea of input modeling, that the variation on the output is due to variation on the input. So no matter how great your flowchart is, if you choose the wrong input models, then you can get an output that isn't useful. So input modeling is the sort of almost most important part of simulation modeling in order to make your sims actually realistic. You have these external factors, these inputs that come in, those need to be chosen correctly. So we have this sort of basic vocabulary for this class that hopefully we've built up, that, you know, you've got these continuous distributions that are in your toolkit that you can use in tools like Arena. You've got these discrete that we don't use in Arena as much, but they do come up. So, you know, if you were to sort of imagine questions about these things, like what type of distribution might I use for the number of bags that someone is going to bring to the airport? Well, you know, it's hard to know whether that's best modeled is one of the, I mean, that might just be a discrete distribution that you just pick off empirical data. But, you know, those are types of, you know, occasionally it does come up like the number of items. Here's a good one. So in a grocery store, sometimes you have to figure out how long someone is going to take to get through the checkout line. Well, how many items are in their cart might directly impact that. And that might be a discrete quantity. That might be well fit as a Poisson because it's a count. It's not quite a count of an event, but Poisson variables are often used for counts. But if the process was generated more as a yes, no thing, like, you know, it's almost like one of those those game shows where people have a limited amount of time and so they're deciding, do I pick something off the shelf or not in order to get through there, then maybe that, you know, a better model is a binomial distribution where you're sort of flipping coins, decide do I take that or not. So, you know, we don't use the discrete as much, but they are just as important. So knowing the difference between Poisson and this kind of Bernoulli family, I think is still important. Poisson counting process. So knowing that the exponential and the Poisson are kind of married together under this Poisson counting process. And that is a major important tool for queuing systems in particular. So yeah, this whole slide, like being able to kind of feel like you feel comfortable with the content on the slide is, I think, important. And then as a refresher, then for each distribution, there's kind of these little one-liners, or at least in my head, when I think about why would you want to use this distribution over this distribution, then I have these in mind. And so I might ask some questions about, you know, so you've got this process, it's a sum of independent failure times, what I want to use for that. And that might suggest that maybe Erlang K, because that's a sum of exponentials, is a good one to use for that. So those sorts of things. And then there's a likewise for the discretes. So any burning questions about our distributions? Again, we can go back, but I'm just trying to just kind of go through here to just remind everybody what we were doing. So again, if there are any questions that you want me to cover, it's kind of the last time we'll talk about this in class. So random number generation. So now that we have our probability distributions, we need to be able to sample from them. Before we can sample from them, we have to sample from the uniform distribution. So, you know, what the heck is the uniform distribution and how do you sample from it? So that was our linear congruential generator. It's a relatively easy formula. It's probably good to remind yourself of. It would be an easy thing for me to ask. It's not really, though, a big focus, though, after here. So it's one of these things that I'm kind of counting on you having a pseudorandom number generator available to you, and I'm not asked. But I do want you to know, like, why the LCG became so much better than all of the things before it. But, there, of course, there are things even better than the LCG now. But the, you know, the big thing, random variate generation, knowing about your inverse transform sampling, that's huge, because there will be times where you have a distribution and your tool doesn't have a way to sample from it, and you're just going to be limited. In fact, the normal distribution in Excel, the last I checked, there is no way to sample from a normal distribution in Excel without using the inverse transform method. And I think if you ask Microsoft, they would say, yeah, you just use the inverse transform. That's the reason why they provide you the inverse CDF in Excel, is that if you need to generate normally distributed random numbers in Excel, use the inverse transform, because everybody in the biz knows what the inverse transform method, the sampling method is, so they don't need to do it for you. So you should know how to do that. That's definitely on there. Just a brief thing over that. So the random number generation, the big thing, although the LCG might not be something I'm too worried that you remember coming out of here, knowing about sieves, knowing that this is how we generate independent replications from simulations, is behind the scenes, someone is changing the seed in a random number generator. And that's the core of it all. And the fact that if you can ask the simulation for its seed, you can reproduce that exact same trajectory over and over and over again. That is so important, and that's why major important simulation tools will report their seed somewhere, so that after you run your sim, you're like, wow, that was a really weird and interesting case. Let me write that seed down or copy that seed somewhere so that I can examine that more closely later. So knowing about those is definitely important. Again, LCG, maybe not that important, but the inverse transform method, super important to understand that topic. So I'm not going to step through that, but you know, here's, you know, inverse transform method for continuous, inverse transform method for discrete. So any questions about random variates, drawing them, sampling them? All right, so we're getting sort of to the, remembering that, so how many people think this is a CDF? How many people think this is more likely a PDF? How many people think this is neither? Okay, so what about this? How many people think this is a CDF? Okay, more hands. How many people think this is a PDF? How many people think this is neither? All right, so this one, there at least was some consensus that this is a CDF. I like that answer because it starts at zero and it rises to one. Remember, if you take the derivative of a CDF, what do you get? A PDF. So the PDF, the CDF is the integral. If you took the derivative of this thing, it's got a really high slope, and then it's got a really low slope. So its slope starts high, and then it goes low. The derivative of this is this. So this is a PDF, and this is a CDF. The integral under this is this. So, and this thing, its y-axis is not bounded, but which doesn't necessarily discount it for being a anything, but it's a little weird. Like, this is basically an inverse PDF, which isn't a thing, it's not a useful thing. So it's hard to really tell exactly what this is, whether the integral underneath this is equal to one, but I can sort of say, because I drew that, you know, that I want to graph these things, that that's nothing for this. But, you know, this is maybe more realistic case where hopefully it's clear this is a CDF for reasons we described. And then if you said, if that's a CDF, what might its derivative be? Well, it's flat, and then it rises, and then it starts decelerating off here. Well, that's this right here. So this is the derivative of that. So that's your CDF, that's your PDF. This is your inverse CDF, otherwise known as a quantile function. This is an inverse PDF, which in this case isn't even a function. So that's nothing, that's a PDF, that's a CDF, that's a quantile function. So any questions about that? At the final exam stage, it is not uncommon for me to, instead of giving you a formula for a CDF, I might give you a graph of a CDF. And so could you do inverse transform sampling given a graph instead of a formula? How would you do that? You know, that would be something that it'd be worthwhile to sort of think about. Yeah. Well, so I mean, how do you think? How, like, if I were to say, here's how I might say it. Here's a random number, 0.2. Generate a draw from a distribution whose CDF is this. What would a good draw then be if I gave you a random number of 0.2, if this was the CDF I was looking for? Let's see. Well, actually, why did you say zero?
That's right.
That's actually what I'm looking for. So if I take 0.2 and I go over here, if I, you know, staying right here doesn't look like zero, but if I try to draw this horizontally, it ends up being around like 0.25 or something, or negative 0.25 or whatever, but that's the method you're using is exactly what I'm looking for here. So if I go back to this graph here, you know, this is a graph of the CDF of an exponential. So if I were to say, here's a bunch of random numbers, 0.2, 0.8, 0.6, whatever, take the fourth random number and generate a random variate from an exponential distribution, here's the CDF, then you'd say, all right, well, so the fourth random number is, I don't know what I said, 0.7. Well, I go up to 0.7, finder hits the line, that's my variate right there. Does that make sense? So yeah, so that's why I like to give you graphs, because it really shows that you've got that picture in your head. Questions about that? Okay, then we transition to after midterm stuff, which is a lot of stats. So stats, hypothesis testing, this is a great plot to feel very comfortable with. It, you know, being able to, if I give you this, and ask you questions about, you know, these different areas, that would be a very good thing to know. So, you know, and then this ROC curve, you know, this relationship between type 1 error and 1 minus type 2 error, that's a statistical power, is 1 minus type 2. So it's alpha, 1 minus beta, and it has this relationship here. And that trade-off comes from this graph. And that comes from the blue curve and the red curve as you set them on top of each other and sweep this line to the left and right, and you change these areas, you generate this curve. And so being able to see that and understand that is important. You know, of course, knowing these abbreviations, false positive, true positive, true negative, false negative, also good to know. So any questions about this? The sort of stats review. And it's just important to know because, like, we've been talking about type 1 error and a lot of your other stats classes, but we do model fitting. We do goodness of fit. So we also are interested in type 2 error in this class. So, you know, how well do things match? So we do care about both of these things. Okay. So this is just me kind of saying that, you know, and then, you know these terms, know what it means to reject the null. And so you can say reject the null, but what does that mean? So if I were to ask you to interpret why something was, you know, it says, oh, it's point P is less than 0.05 in this case. Well, what does that mean? You know, it's a multiple choice question. And so does that say that, is this a good random number generator? Is this a bad random number generator? You know, those sorts of things. What would we expect? You know, so again, relationship between type 2 error, stat power, those two are just 1 minus each other, and effect size. And so this idea that for the tinier the effect size I want to detect, I need more samples. That, you know, general idea about sampling is important here. So I was just talking to one of my grad students with his co-advisor yesterday about an experiment that he was setting up. And he was really worried about all of these confounding variables in the experiment. But we said, but you know, we are pretty confident there's going to be a large effect. And so even though you've got all these confounders or whatever, you probably don't need to worry about controlling for that variance right now. Because even with a few samples, if this thing that we care about here is real, it will have a large effect size. What we were telling him is that because it has a large effect size, he doesn't need to control for variance very much, or he doesn't need a huge number of samples. That in a quick and dirty experiment, he should be able to see if this effect is there. And that's what I mean about, you know, effect size here. So, you know that if you want to detect something small, you need lots of samples or low variance. If you want to detect something big, you can use less samples. Understand the relationship between standard deviation, standard error, confidence interval, and prediction interval. Knowing the difference between those two, definitely expect questions about PIs and CIs. So questions about stats or sampling? Okay. You know, input modeling again, identifying probability distribution, knowing the general process here, being able to interpret a QQ plot or a PP plot. I'm not going to require you to know the rules of like, oh, if the QQ plot's bent this way, then it should be this distribution or not. But being able to say that, oh, that, you know, this QQ plot is a good fitting result and this is a bad fitting result, that's probably good to know. We already talked about these distributions and you know, their general shape. So this is kind of just going rehashing stuff that we talked about pre-midterm. So, you know, what does a normal distribution look like? What's special about a normal? How many parameters does a normal have? What do they mean? Same thing with Weibull, Poisson. QQ versus P plot P. So, you know, which one of these is good, which one of these is bad, those sorts of things. Summary statistics, remember that you have to divide by N minus one when you're calculating variance, when you use the mean estimated from data. That's something that's easy to forget. So good to have in there. Distribution parameters, know that maximum likelihood estimator is a nice way of figuring out the kind of best choice when there's ambiguity. So just because you take a sample mean, the sample mean isn't necessarily the parameter that should go into the mean of a distribution you're choosing. So if I look in the maximum likelihood estimator for that parameter, you find it all to be a function of the sample mean. And so, you know, knowing that use of MLEs, an example of MLEs there, and then the tests. So if I've got my input models, how do I test that they work, that they fit up my data pretty well? Knowing about the generic chi-squared test, this constraint that the expected, not observed, expected counts in the bins have to be 5 or greater. That's important. And then how to continue with this. So you have to figure out how to calculate this expected probability to do this expected value in each bin. Also the KS test for a general distribution, it's exactly the same as a KS test pre-midterm, but after you sort the data, you then pipe them through the hypothetical CDF. And then those are the things that get put into this table. And then it's like a pre-midterm KS test. Questions? So that's our input modeling and fitting unit. Okay. So verification, validation, and calibration. So the general overview of how the process works. So, you know these terms, validation. So verification versus validation. Verification is just debugging. Validation is actually testing the goodness of fit of your model. So I built my model correctly. How well does it fit the real world? So I use statistical tests to evaluate that. And power analysis is necessary for me to sort of figure out how many samples do I need to run before I can properly detect a difference between my sim and the real world. So if I just run one replication of my sim, it generates an output that may as well be the real world output. But if once I generate 10, then I see all 10 of those are way too high or way too low, then that means that my sim, there's something that's probably wrong with it. So knowing how many to run, that's why we bring up power analysis in this V&D section. So questions about any of that? Okay. Then point estimators versus interval estimators. So just know that at this point in the class, I'm expecting you to use interval estimators. And what are interval estimators? So remember that a confidence interval is just a geometric interpretation of a t-test. So hopefully that makes sense by now. If it doesn't, then ask me about it, because that's definitely important. Prediction interval is sort of, it captures the sort of the true variance versus the variance generated by sampling or by lack of sampling. So it is related to the confidence interval. Clearly the formulas are very similar, but it is not the same as confidence interval. So there's a distinction between those two. How many replicates to run of terminating simulations, that's your like power analysis, or choosing the desired half width of your confidence interval. So understanding where this formula comes from and how to use this formula to get a good ballpark of how many replications to run. And then for our steady state simulation bias. So if I've got my steady state here, how much data do I get rid of? How long do I run it? So warm up period, where do I initialize it? More replicates or longer execution time. So we talked about those sorts of issues. And then we talked about relative performance. So if I've got a bunch of different models and I want to compare them, then when can I use these different types of tests? And so if I ran the experiment a certain way, then I might use a paired difference t-test to compare them. If I ran them in other ways, I might use a pooled two-sample t-test or an unequal variance two-sample t-test. So knowing the difference between all three of these in comparing simulations together, that's something that's important. And then I've mentioned a couple of times this error that you can get into with multiple comparisons. So when you're comparing more than two things, then you have to be careful about using pairwise tests, because you inflate the chance that when you combine all the tests together, the family-wise error rate will be higher than your desired alpha. So the way we do that is by either using a fancy tool like an ANOVA that doesn't have this problem, or if we use pairwise tests, then we do that Bonferroni correction where you divide the alpha by the number of comparisons to keep the family-wise error down. That makes your individual tests less sensitive, but it helps make the sensitivity of your family-wise tests, so all of those tests combined, not overly sensitive. So questions about that, all of our ways to evaluate performance of sims. It's kind of a whirlwind here. But then VRT, our last unit. So these are our four variance reduction techniques. Remember, this is primarily ways to keep the number of replications down, or for the same number of replications, make your inferences tighter. And so we talked about CRNs, AVs, control variants, and important sampling. So you know, CRNs, this goes back to our muffin making sim. Control variants, this is kind of this example here where you know the temperature, but you don't know the output, but you know the output is correlated with temperature. So how do you subtract off the variance due to temperature? And I guess with the analogy here, how do you subtract off the variance due to common inputs? Then AVs, how do you then take a single simulation and run two sets of inputs that are strongly related to each other in the hopes of generating a negative correlation between these outputs, that one is above average, the other is below average, so that when I take the mean, and this is the so-called antithetic variant, then it's more likely to be much closer to the real mean. So that's the antithetic variance, and then important sampling. So this idea that can I actually purposely bias my input models to cause my outputs to generate important events more often, and then take that more often number and then translate it back into a real world frequency based on what I know about what I did to my input models as I was stress testing the model here. So knowing the difference between all those four. So any questions about ERTs? So then the last thing is just ARENA stuff. So I'm not going to ask you a lot of very, very detailed, complex questions about ARENA. This is not an advanced ARENA exam, but it's a basic ARENA exam. It's a basic discrete event system simulation exam. So expect to have see the basic blocks in a block diagram, you know, create, dispose, decide, record, process, understand the logic, understand where resources show up inside the model, where entities show up, where they meet, what are the different configurations, you know, basic syntax here. So if I were to show you a Expo 5, you could say, yeah, that's an exponential random variant with a mean of 5, and know that the units in the block determine what that 5 is, 5 minutes, 5 seconds, 5 hours. But then if I do comma 1, to know that, wait, an exponential doesn't have two parameters, it only has one parameter, so what's the 1? The 1 is that random number stream. So that allows you to adjust where what stream of pseudo-random numbers it's drawing from, which allows you to do some of the playing with that we talked about in the VRT section, to adjust how it's drawing its numbers. There's a, you know, disk. So I definitely think you should know the disk effectively encodes a quantile function. So it's odd arguments are the CDF, and its even arguments are the outcomes. So knowing that, so it's basically an inverse CDF, that quant basically takes disk and then does an interpolation in the CDF so that it fills in those lines. Understand, you know, where to find the seeds element, or at least understand that ARENA can be used to do CRNs and AVs. And then in statistics, so confidence intervals, and converting confidence intervals to standard deviations. So, you know, ARENA's main output is confidence intervals. And so knowing how to work with them when they come out of the ARENA model. And that's basically 475 in a nutshell without even going the full period. So, you know, it would be really boring and dull, but we can teach all of 475 in 75 minutes. So there's not too much new that's going to be on the final, but and it will come from those kind of, you know, those are the areas that I think are kind of most important. So those are the ones that I sample from to sort of stress test you, so that I can then see how well you'll retain those leading the class. So any questions? Yep. Those will be there. Yeah, so same, it's set up just like the midterm. So yeah, I guess I try not to surprise you without the midterm, and if I did, I'm sorry. But yeah, the first three questions will ask you, do you understand the setup of the lockdown setup? There will be an attendance question so those four questions there at the top will just sort of be given. So yeah, that's all there. Other questions? Or otherwise, that's all I've got prepared for you. So, you know, if you do have questions that you're shy to speak in full class, feel free to come up after. Otherwise, unless you'd like to make a meeting, then that's probably all I'll see of you unless you come to class. So have a nice winter break. Don't forget, student evaluations are available. I think we've had very few people actually fill them out. So if you'd like to fill them out, then you should feel free to do so. The link for that is right on Canvas, in a couple of places, right in the top left of Canvas. And no more clicker questions. So that's all I got.